Talk given Friday, 3rd February 1978. Everyone in the world uses this word mind. But just what do we mean by the word mind? What is mind? There are several definitions, and yet not a single one of them is really satisfactory. There are all sorts of ideas about the nature of the mind, how the mind works, and so on. And yet, if one goes deeply into it, none of these is really satisfactory. In fact, it seems to me that mind is one of those words which cannot be pinpointed. Cannot be defined. Put into the pigeonhole of a pattern of words, or a special concept, or a set of concepts. We can have suggestive ideas, suggestive concepts and words. You may recall the suggestion made in these groups that it could be helpful to regard mind as a receptive, responsive sensitivity characterizing the living human being. This definition, if we like to call it definition, it's pretty vague as it stands. This definition applies also to animals. It also applies to the whole of the living world, right down to the cell, single cell. It was Sherrington, that world-famous neurophysiologist, who said that if by mind we mean the ability to learn, then even a single cell may be regarded as manifesting mind. I like to look at mind in another way too, in addition to the suggestion that it is a receptive, responsive sensitivity characterizing the living human being. We know now, and I deliberately use the word know, that the entire cosmos is the product the manifestation of the creative action of primordial creative energy, whatever that may be. Now, this cosmos displays what we call mind. But if that primordial creative energy, through its creative activity, has given rise to the total cosmos, and mind is manifest in various parts of that cosmos, pure mind in itself may be regarded as a manifestation at a transcendental level of this creative energy in action. Try not to think about these statements. Try and feel them out. Don't make an effort to feel them out, but let this receptive, responsive sensitivity of the living body be purely receptive and let this energy, which in itself is unknown and unknowable as such, which we call pure mind, affect this sensitivity in us. Be very careful when you attempt this. If the brain starts working hard, well, it won't do you any harm. But the effect of pure mind on the organism will not penetrate into the organism. You will know only by being pure mind. That kind of knowledge is beyond concept and beyond word patterns. It needs a considerable degree of purity of the psychophysical organism and skill in mindfulness to stand the impact of mind in its reality upon the organism. If those two, purity and mindfulness, are not present, the organism can be shattered. Those of you who have dipped into the heart of religion will, and dipped into the last page of it, we'll see the statement there. In, I think, one but the last paragraph, that pure mind functions freely through the utterly purified psyche, through that kind of person, unshattered. And one may wonder what a curious word to use in this connection. But there was a very good reason for that single word there. One remains unshattered if there has been, and there is therefore present, the right foundation. You remember the Buddha's words, cease to do evil, strive to do good, purify the mind. That is the way of the Buddhas, the enlightened ones. And the enlightened ones are not clever ones. They are not those who carry the burden of encyclopedic knowledge in the worldly sense of the word knowledge. This wisdom of the Buddhas, this enlightenment, means that a Buddha, and this applies to all the supreme spiritual teachers, is one who has become so transmuted within himself that this energy, this transcendental energy, pure mind, functions freely through him. And a Buddha, a Christ, a Zarathustra, a Krishna, and so many like them, are never shattered by it. This is one of the supreme things that happens with the yogi. You will appreciate, therefore, why the discipline of the yogi is no other than the discipline of the true contemplative, the true religia, the one who is truly concerned with so living in this world, that through him the purpose of human existence is fulfilled, namely the transformation, the development, the growth through and out of the subhuman state into the fully human state. The Son of Man is the Son of God. The Manushya Putra is also the Brahmaputra. One can never repeat that too often, because if one doesn't take that fully into account and let it be the central keynote of one's daily life, one is and remains a mere dilettante. worse than just being a dilettante. One is hypocritical with himself and in relationship to the world. Purify the mind. Now, how can you purify mind if you regard mind as a manifestation at a transcendental level of this creative energy in creative action in eternity, as contrasted with activity in time, which has continuity, repetitiveness, confinement to patterns. So it is not that mind which is being purified. In short, we use this phrase, my mind, your mind, his mind, what a great mind, what a little mind. This is the usual way people do talk, but it may be suggested, this way is inconvenient, it's inadequate, it can be positively misleading. Because whosoever does live the religious life and comes to flower in it is well aware that there is no such thing as my mind, just as there is no such thing as my space, as my property. The universal, the totality, holds not merely as a container, holds every single particular, every single finite manifested thing, whatsoever it may be. So you see, when we talk about the purifying of the mind, we are talking about the purifying of a certain aspect of our own organism. This receptive, responsive sensitivity of the living human organism enables this universal energy at its transcendental level, so to interact right at the beginning of the organism, to give rise to what we may legitimately call one's own psyche, my psyche. Admittedly, this is arbitrary to me. I have arbitrarily sort of used this concept for the psyche and tried to suggest the other for this universal energy, which is mind. The complex, the whole set the whole process of the what we call the mental processes, our mental processes in our lifetime, is our psychical activity through our life. It is our organism, the psychical part of the psychophysical organism especially, which can get ill, which can suffer, which can go astray, which can be sick, imperfect, ignorant, and all the rest of it. It is that which we have to deal with. Now, I trust this is reasonably clear. And the outstanding weakness, shortcoming, drawback of the psyche is that we feel and think of ourselves in terms of separateness from the totality. This is the fundamental root of conflict and illness. And it is the producer, the maintainer, the perpetuator of the ill state, of evil, of suffering, dukkha. Try, of course, in order to get the idea, you have to use the mind, the brain. You have to think, as we say, in the ordinary way. Perfectly true. That is our starting point. But don't let the brain run away with your mental process. Because if the brain runs away with the mental process, it usurps the function, the gently, tenderly growing function of our receptive, responsive sensitivity. And therefore, universal mind cannot bring its transcendental influence to bear upon you, the person. So, let the brain act to the minimum possible extent, which means let the psyche as a whole, the intellectual, emotional, the thought-feeling process, let the psyche as a whole be quiet as possible, doing nothing of its own volition. Then you allow transcendence to do the needful for you, psychologically, spiritually. How does the body grow healthily? Because this mysterious energy, life, this mysterious life power works upon the fertilized ovum and brings after birth brings the whole body to maturity. Can you or I control that life energy and its process? We can obstruct it. We can toe the line with it. Right food, right drink, exercise, rest, living a sensible life, not the slaves of our sense drives, our pleasure drives, and all the rest of it. So too with the psyche. This excessively active brain becomes a curse. So let the psyche as a whole remain quiet. And as and when the psyche is quiet and the sense functions are working freely but utterly peacefully, then you will become aware, deeply aware of that which is beyond the limitations of the psychophysical process, the brain activity. We all talk in grand terms. All life is one. Mankind is one great united whole. You can take the phrase I use so frequently, the one total reality. It's perfectly easy to mouth these words. But one has to grow into the living awareness of the truth that these words veil. And it is this growing into that awareness which plays a very important part in the life of the Ralisha. The mystics, the poets, laymen in the world, thousands of them, time and again experience in their moments of inner psychological peace and quietude this extraordinary sense of oneness with everything, with the whole world, with nature. The discordant statement, so and so is my enemy, vanishes. One doesn't feel hostile or inimical towards him, but only for the time being. Now we can utilize certain modes of feeling to help us to let that inner awareness of complete relationship with totality become second nature to us. You all know, we have practiced it sometimes here, what we have called the earth meditation. Several of you have been through it here and at our summer schools. How often or how constant in the meaning of not frequency, but constancy, fidelity. How constant has been that type of meditation in our lives? Especially when conditions of conflict appear. Let us, if you are agreeable, practice this now. Don't treat it as a panacea. Don't regard it as the super pill which will work miracles inside us, take us to higher planes and leave us there. It might be very useful if some people did get left on the higher planes and never came back here to plague mankind. But still, there was a magnificently inimical statement towards fellow human beings. You see? How many of you spotted it? All right. So now, just let the body be perfectly restful. Restful means alert, elastic, in the healthy state of balanced opposing tensions throughout the body. Opposing not in the sense of irreconcilability, but as constituting the poles of one great sphere. Perfectly rhythmic. No strain in the muscles of the neck, in the region of the solar plexus and the abdomen and the pelvis. And the head comfortably balanced upon the neck. The neck muscles at ease, elastic ease. Be quietly aware, quietly and intensely aware of the life rhythm of the body. Now this is true bodily enjoyment, bodily happiness. Be well aware of it, mindful of it. Observe it without any reactions for or against it from the brain. Reactions from the brain. Pure observation. If that observation is pure, you will be able to be aware of the fact that there is no turmoil of either thought or feeling. It's like one of those not too frequent magical days we get in England when nature is smiling at peace, utterly beautiful. This is true enjoyment. Now, similarly, peacefully, let us be aware of everyone present in this room. Without aversion, without attachment. That's extremely important. It's the fundamentally important point. Living organisms characterized by this receptive, responsive sensitivity, which enables universal mind to flow into us. Be aware of the whole room, the objects in it. Don't conjure up pictures of each single object separately, but just be generally aware, objects being present, the room, the whole house. Be aware of its wholeness. Several finite particulars in full relationship to each other, constituting a living whole. That is what I mean by saying be aware of it. Try and extend to that awareness to the whole district, be aware of relationships being actively present, which the brain cannot know, but they are there. Whatever they may be, no aversion, no attachment. This great city of London, be aware of so many activities taking place in this city right now. Activities of men and machines. the weather condition, the movement of cloud and rain and air, let that receptive sensitivity be quite open and receive everything. So you grow in this inclusive awareness, and the oneness becomes a slightly deeper, more living reality. Let this intensely mindful awareness include all that lies round the globe in our longitude. London is the starting point, 0 degrees longitude. Right round the poles, be aware of the differences between the groups of people living on this longitude at this moment of chronological time. But whose psychological correspondence, psychological time, is different for different people because they are paying attention to all kinds of different things. Don't enumerate the things. Be aware of the general fact, the qualitative fact. Right round the globe at this moment, so many things which characterize human activity, animal activity, plant activity, are all taking place now. Let the brain consciousness move, let us say, eastward. Other activities, other processes are going on. Make the grand circle right round the globe. And be awake to the fact that every single thing, every single process and activity which characterizes man and the other kingdoms on the globe, every single type of action, good, bad, indifferent, in thought and feeling, in speech and action. Every single thing is taking place simultaneously, now. Take it easy as you see this, but take it in intensity. The psyche can take it. So that we see, we can clearly see that the immediate here now, the single moment of the entire globe comprises all the activities and processes, etc., of the individual human beings, the animals, the trees, and the whole lot, which take place in our 24 hours. Just for convenience and for ease in grasping the immensity of it, 24 hours for men and women over the globe is the equivalent of the immediate moment of the entire earth, of Mother Earth. So the whole planet, in its life process, the single moment comprises all 24 hours of the separate components which make the totality of this planet. Just quietly get the feel of it. Don't react to it at all. Don't attempt to make any specific or particular response to it. Just be mindfully aware of it. And if one's own psychophysical organism is at peace, is pure, then the influence that radiates out from the organism is the supremely perfect way that one's own organism is capable of being in tune with the world process, being in harmony with it, and being a center, a focus point for the healing power of transcendent mind to work through the individual organism. This is one aspect of meditation in its inner nature. This way, There is no interference with the process of life in all the individual manifestations of life on the whole planet. There is no limitation in terms of petitionary prayer, which is always ego-centered in some way or other, which has a vested interest in it. It is contemplative prayer in its profound sense, which is true meditation. And this is the acknowledgement of the unity of the universe, of the cosmos. When you practice this by yourself, if you find that your mind, I beg your pardon, that your whole attention, if you find that your whole attention is intense and peaceful, that there is no psychical disturbance within, or a psychical unbalance through elation, through this being carried away by what we call sublime feelings or thoughts and so forth, then you can extend that beyond the planet to as far as your own individual psyche and the brain allows you to do, because although there may not be any conscious disallowing, what disallowing takes place is due to the simple fact that we are limited, finite beings. In this type of meditation, you will experience the reality, the truth, the whole actuality of what it means to be at ease in your own soul, your own psyche. You know how the Buddha talks of it in the discourses. He just uses that word ease. This sense of ease, he says, permeates the entire organism, the entire body. And he uses the word mind, of course. But I think for us today in our time and age, it will be perhaps, for some of us anyway, a little more clear if we use the word psyche. Because the organism is a psychophysical organism. It's not yet the perfect nama rupa. the mind body, because that stage, that condition has a very remarkable name attached to it, and it comes in Mahayana, the Nirmanakaya. There is that other name, the Sambhogakaya, the enjoyer of bliss, the body of enjoyment, as it is called. It is not a separate body from this body, it is the same body, but it is functioning in such a manner that it is called the body which enjoys bliss. Bliss, not pleasure. Not the world's definition of happiness and joy and so forth. This is a state of unitary wholeness within oneself and in total relationship with what is commonly called, and it is actually a miscalling, the not-self. This is what the yogi does when he sits for days on end in meditation. And it is this which enables universal mind to utilize you, the psychophysical organism, to pour its beneficence, its transformative and transmutative energy into you and through you, and let it radiate out of you upon the environment. If you understand this, again, through your deepmost sensitivity, not merely through the brain, if you understand this, you will understand so many statements in the scriptures which are so cryptic, enigmatic, incomprehensible. But as the Buddha said in the Brahmajala Sutta, but which can be known by the wise.